This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. The Heartland International Film Festival kicks off tomorrow in Indianapolis. Since 1992, the festival has grown from a four-day event with little more than a dozen films to 11 days and more than 200 movies. So, who's coming this year? And what's it like to put it all together? We'll find out this hour, but first we're talking to two filmmakers who've entered this year's festival and who shot their movies here. Of course, we'd love to hear from you. Are you planning on coming to the festival? Have you been before? What did you think? If you yourself are a filmmaker, what's it like to work here? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Elizabeth Mitchell is a producer for the documentary film Reverend Marvin Chandler, Open to the Moment. Thanks for coming in, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
And on the phone is Pratna Mohan, director and co-writer of the feature film The Miseducation of Bindu. Thanks for joining us, Pratna.
Thanks for having me on, Matt. And hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Pratna, we're going to start with you. Can you tell us about The Miseducation of Bindu? What's the movie about?
Absolutely. So The Miseducation of Bindu is a coming-of-age story about a young Indian-American teen who has one Spanish exam to test out of high school, absolutely hates high school because she's being bullied. And at home, she's sort of confronting her mom's new marriage to her new husband, Bill, played by David Arquette. And it's sort of her trials and tribulations as she tries to escape from high school in this one fateful day as she has to take her final Spanish test.
They say to write what you know. Is it autobiographical in any way?
No, it's not. But I co-wrote this film with Kate Tuckford, and there's definitely a lot of us in the movie, but there's also a lot of stuff that's, you know, just fiction. But we certainly could relate to her, and the reason we wrote it was because we wanted to make a high school film with characters that felt and looked like us, which is not something you often see in high school films. So that's why we're excited to bring Bindu to Heartland.
And I'm glad that you made it here in Indiana. You live in Los Angeles, where, of course, a lot of filmmakers live and make movies, but you made this here. How did that happen?
One of the best decisions we ever made was actually making this film in Indiana. My husband, also the producer of this film, is an Indiana native. He was born and raised in Indianapolis. We actually got married in Indianapolis back in 2008, so Indiana has a very fond place in my heart. When we made this film, we entered into this competition called Seed and Spark, which is a crowdfunding platform where we got to pitch to the Duplass brothers, and that's how we got them as executive producers on our film. And the entire premise of this competition was to bring movies to places that don't typically have a film production, and it was a no-brainer for us to come to Indiana because we have so many friends and family there, and we have tons of nieces and nephews that are in, you know, in middle school and high school that have always been sort of intrigued about the filmmaking process and what we do. So we were like, hey, let's go make this movie in Indiana. Ed was like, the entire community will come out to support us, and they did not disappoint. We also partnered with Pegasus Pictures, who are doing really incredible things in Indianapolis and in Bloomington, making films there. So this is their third movie in Indiana, and we were really excited to partner with them. And everyone really came out and supported us, and people were just so generous and kind and wonderful. It was a completely different experience than making movies in L.A., where it's a massive industry, and I think to an extent people are kind of jaded. People just were open and welcomed us with open arms, and I think that just made a world of a difference to us.
Elizabeth, we'll come to you now. You worked on a documentary called Reverend Martin Chandler, Open to the Moment. Who was Marvin Chandler? And for those who don't know, who was he?
Marvin Chandler was born and raised in Bloomington, Indiana. He was born in 1929, and of course that was during the height of segregation. And he, at the age of four, could play the piano like you wouldn't believe. So much so that people in the neighborhood would come in and say, could you play this? Could you play that? And instantly he could play it. His mother bought a piano for $1.50 at a yard sale for his sister to play. and the kids were in the living room playing church because their family was deeply religious and were members of Second Baptist Church, Bloomington, Indiana, which still stands today. So Marvin was playing for the kids, and they were singing songs, and to the amazement of his mother, who didn't know, and of neighbors who came into the house. They're watching this little four-year-old whose feet couldn't touch the pedals play one gospel tune after another.
Wow. How long have you and your team been working on this movie?
We started in 2010.
Wow.
I retired in 2013, but prior to that, my passion has been to tell the stories of African Americans, their culture, and the experience of being African-American in Indiana. So I travel around finding stories. And here was one sitting right in my lap, Reverend Marvin Chandler, an amazing man. And my life has changed since meeting him. Such a spiritual person. My life is better from meeting him.
How many people did you work with? I imagine 9 years, some people might have come and gone. Throughout the process?
No, we stay the same. I have a wonderful team.
Did you really?
Oh, yes. That Goditis Productions, that's David Goditis, Larry Laswell, and Alan Bachter. We work together. They like to follow me around telling stories. We've got several projects in the works now, and I'm looking forward to putting them out there for the public. I want to educate people about the contributions of African Americans, not only in the state of Indiana, but also in this nation. But we're starting right here, telling these stories. And Reverend Marvin Chandler deserved to be told, and people in Indiana need to know that here's a man that had an impact on the nation. Because he was one of the negotiators for the Attica prison riot. He worked with Howard Thurman in California. Here's a man that is balancing jazz music, which was considered the devil's music, and his ministry and love for God. So this is a compelling story. It's worth seeing, and please come out and see it.
Well, you're a producer. What does a producer do on a project like this?
We go out after finding the story. We interview people, and we took our time with Reverend Marvin Chandler because he's 90 years old. He just turned 90 on Saturday. So here's a man that has done remarkable things that very few African-American men get to do. And so it took a while, and we wanted to take our time. So with interviewing him, going on location to his home in different venues, videotaping him play, going back to research the Attica prison riot, his work with Howard Thurman. He was an airplane pilot. Just a remarkable person that deserved our time and attention, and we did that.
Pratna, what was it like working here in Indianapolis? How is it different than somewhere like Los Angeles?
I think the key differences were probably trying to, talk to folks when we were back in L.A., calling them and telling them, hey, we're coming out to make a movie. We'd like to come and take a look at your location or your school. And, people were just, confused by that. They were not really that receptive. And it was such a different experience when we were on the ground and we came and met with them in person. Because I truly think that in Indianapolis, they accept you as who you are rather than calling on the phone and telling them, hey, I'm from L.A., can we come and film in your school or your house or whatever? That does not mean anything to them. And it was really refreshing to see how once they met us and they got to know us, they just opened up their homes or schools or whatever it was to us. And I think the other really, really big difference was, there was this one experience that I remember where we were filming in this house in Carmel, and we got one of the PAs coming in saying that the neighbors wanted to talk to the producer. And we knew that, someone was upset because a film set can be pretty sprawling and take over a lot of space. And everyone is so focused on what's happening in front of the camera that sometimes, things can happen on the fringes. And my husband, the producer, went out to talk to them. And the neighbor was like, hey, you guys have a car truck blocking our driveway. We've opened up our garage. Just come on in and use it. That would never happen in L.A. I mean, they were just so kind and let us just camp out in their garage for the 3 days that we were out there. And I think those were the really, really big differences. Indiana brought a lot of heart to this film. We had my mother-in-law's friends came to lunch every day as volunteers and made sure that everybody ate. It was just the nicest, warmest feeling to be out there and film this movie.
A volunteer craft services. That's some big help.
Yes, absolutely. And it was really like having your mom there, making sure everybody ate. You know, it was really, really sweet and wonderful.
You also used the now closed Broad Ripple High School building as your backdrop. What was it like to have that? I assume you had a lot of freedom in there since it's not an active school anymore.
Yes. I mean, Broad Ripple High School is such an incredible facility. Again, something that we could have never gotten in L.A. or California. Our schools just don't look like that. We connected with them kind of towards the end when we were running out of options, and we walked in there and we just knew we had to film there. It is such a stunning facility. It is so sad that it is not, the last class graduated right before we filmed. It's a beautiful school. The students were so talented. There was incredible artwork everywhere, which, you know, has made it to the film, and we hope that we can have a screening for the alumni of Broad Ripple High at some point so that, they can see the school that they went to, and we hope we memorialized it for them because we had, the entire school at our disposal, and, the folks that worked there were so helpful and really accommodating. So it looks great. We were so lucky to have it.
We only have about a minute left in this segment. We'd like to hold on to both of you for the next segment. I have one more question for you, Pradna. Were there moments when you filmed here when you wished that you were back in L.A. with all the resources that city has to maybe make things go a little smoother?
I mean, for sure. The night before we filmed, we had sort of a confusion with where our camera would have to come from. And one of our producers, Zach Spicer, actually had to fly and then to Atlanta and then drive the gear up to L.A. The night before the filming, which was definitely something that was unusual for us because we would just go to another house in L.A. to find what we needed. There were definitely moments like that were challenging and different. But nothing that we couldn't work around because we had a really great team that was willing to do whatever it took. There were challenges for sure. But, there are challenges anytime we make movies. Every day is a twist and turn, on set. So we're ready for it.
We appreciate you being here today. Pradna Mohan and Elizabeth Mitchell, can you both stick around for the next segment?
Absolutely, I can.
Absolutely, thank you.
Up next, we'll bring in a couple people from Heartland Film to talk about how the event is changing, plus Indiana's role in the movie business. As always, we'll take your questions and comments on social media. What are you excited about seeing this year? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Stay with us. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to our show on the Heartland International Film Festival, I want to tell you about yesterday's show on the White River. We talked to reporters and industry officials about the latest cleanup efforts and how the river affects the community and environment around it. You can find a podcast of that and all our shows wherever you get podcasts. Today, we're talking about filmmaking and film festivals in Indiana, specifically the Heartland International Film Festival. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions or comments for our live panel, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Back with us again are two filmmakers. Elizabeth Mitchell is a producer for the documentary film Reverend Marvin Chandler, Open to the Moment. And on the phone is Pradna Mohan, director and co-writer of the feature film The Miseducation of Bindu. And in the studio now, we welcome Greg Sorbig. Greg is the artistic director for Heartland Film. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And we're also joined by the president of Heartland Film, Craig Prater. Craig, thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Craig, we'll start with you. You've been with Heartland for a few years. What did you do before that?
Well, this past August, I started my 30th year of International Film Festival involvement. So I've been with Heartland 3 years. I was in Southern California with Palm Springs and then off to Bangkok and Cape Town and Cabo St. Lucas. So Now I'm in Indianapolis at the Heartland Film Festival, and I'm loving every minute of it.
How do we compare to those other cities?
We are, with no reservations, I can comfortably say we measure up and we surpass all of those other locations.
Really? Yep. What makes you say that?
Well, because when you take our film festival that now in its 28th year and take all the components and pieces of it, whether it's the film lineup, the events, the programming, we would surpass any of those. All I ask people to do is measure it and just see for yourself.
For a number of years now, especially since Netflix and other streaming services exploded in popularity, people have wondered if movie theaters will survive. You've been in the film industry for a long time. Are the same kinds of concerns happening there in the film festival industry?
All the time. It seems like when you've been doing it for a number of years, you see the changes all the time. You think there can't be any more changes, but just hold tight for another year and there's always something new on the table. It's an ever-changing project.
Greg.
And I will challenge people. Maybe we need to do a poll online, but how often do you browse things you could watch on Netflix or another streaming as opposed to actually watching something?
Sometimes it's the entire time I spend there is just looking at what I might watch and then not watching anything.
Yeah, so that's my blessing and burden at the same time, to be kind of the curator. Say, hey, these are things you have to watch. And for me, give that opportunity to see something in a setting where you're dedicated, you don't have your phone next to you, you're not casually half watching something, and getting to meet some of these fantastic filmmakers at the same time.
Along those lines, Craig, are you seeing trends one way or another on ticket sales for the festival due to those factors?
Well, yes, but I think because of the work of Greg and his associate, Julia, their lineup that they've secured, because they had to look at a lot of films. They had a record-breaking submissions this year, and as a result of their programming, that's what's making the difference in ticket sales.
Greg, you're the artistic director for the festival. What does that mean?
Essentially, I'm the movie man. I'm the one who's developing
relationships. Are you all movie people?
The anecdote I like to use, I'm the head prospector, if you will, through this process. So that means basically we have films that are submitted from around the world through our submission process. So films that are just hoping for a chance. So we have over 90 local volunteers, and some actually nationally, internationally, who watch remotely and score the films. And basically they are prospecting for gold. They are sifting through and really separating the dirt from maybe the fool's gold or the real thing. And then hopefully my team and kind of our senior staff can help decide what are those top films. Additionally, go to other film festivals around the world and try to find those big nuggets, if you will, as well. So that's it. I'm trying to just find the best films I can that also make the most sense for Indianapolis in terms of the schedule of when films are released and that kind of stuff. We happen to be at the forefront of award season right after Venice, Toronto, and Telluride. So we're in a really great spot as well.
What is it like? I imagine you have to watch a lot of movies to do that. How do you manage your time leading up to the festival to kind of screen all these or at least audition some of them?
Yeah, so we have – if we're at a festival and we have that dedicated time to see something and we love it, we can kind of earmark it. But from there, from the submissions process, we have kind of rolling deadlines. So if you submit your film earlier, it costs you less money, potentially have more eyes on it as well. We guarantee that at least one human being will watch your movie all the way through and will give you feedback even if you don't make it. And sometimes people take that to heart and they resubmit and make it the next year, which is a neat experience too. But really, without all the people, it's not – I'm not sitting there in my basement alone watching movies the entire time. I'm really relying on people to give me great feedback and go from there.
I would imagine there's a lot more to it than just searching for movies on a computer and emailing people. You probably have people submitting things to you as well. Can you describe in detail kind of more about the process?
Yeah, definitely. So if you just – our reviewers, they see a film and we rank it from 1 to 5, 5 being phenomenal, 1 being just fair, not that great too. Mm. And to be honest –
that's a very Midwestern ranking. The fact that the lowest one is fair, not, fair. It's fine, but no. You're being very nice.
And I would say 3 is average, and that's where most things are average. And I think, in society, my sister growing up would cry if she got an A-. That's still fantastic. It's really good. Mm-hmm. But not everything is going to be an A or whatever, too. So really something that expands upon a genre, something that could really resonate with an audience, something that has a different take, a little bit fresh or different. Or in this case of Indiana films with different viewpoints, different backgrounds, subjects, styles as well.
How long have you been doing it?
I've been with Heartland now for 8 years. Started with marketing and kind of worked my way in some different areas. I started as a reviewer on a volunteer basis.
And so I would imagine the process has changed since you started because, you know, things have gotten a little better, you know, a little more bandwidth. You can get movies that way. Seems like face-to-face meetings, though, are probably still crucial to that, even after technology's made it so easy.
Yeah, even from people from the, you know, independent level, Film Freeway is the biggest platform. People can actually create their own page for their film and submit it to festivals, but I write for their blog every now and then, and I tell people, hey, you know, reach out to me. Doesn't mean I'm going to email back immediately, but I'd love to just reach out. I think, you know, the film industry, you think, oh, I can't talk to anybody, but hopefully we bring a little bit of that Hoosier hospitality even to that process. And if you submit a film, reach out to me. Say, hey, I submitted. Just keep on your radar, something like that. But even with the big studio titles, we went to Toronto and we landed these huge movies like A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Tom Hanks and Just Mercy from Warner Brothers. Films I was chasing for a long time. And it's the studio relationships actually being there saying, hey, I saw the movie, believe in the movie, love the movie. That helped get it here, as opposed to just being one of hundreds of programmers who maybe is emailing or calling trying to get a crack at the film.
Pratna Mohan still on the phone. Pratna, what's the process like for you as a filmmaker to get into festivals like this?
It's its own sort of animal. Once you're ready to start submitting, and I think a lot of what Greg said is correct, you submit, you start building relationships with programmers, you need to do some research because not all festivals are correct for you. You need to find the place where you'll find the biggest audience for your movie. So maybe Sundance is not that place. Maybe it's somewhere else, and especially for a film that we made, which does have sort of very specific themes. We wanted to find the right kind of festival. Heartland was 100% top on our list because it gave us the opportunity to bring the movie back home. We were able to sell out our screening so quickly, which is, I don't know if it'll ever happen in my career again, but it was awesome. You spend some time looking at festivals, looking at sort of their themes, their programs, and finding out if it's a good fit, and then, you know, submit, write a cover letter, and make sure that you can connect with someone. And absolutely, submit as early as possible because the chances that your film will actually get seen are much higher.
And how important is it to get into festivals after finishing your movie? Is it ultimately about getting distribution?
Yes, getting distribution is absolutely very important. But when we make these sort of smaller indie films, it's really important to get the film out there to festivals because, one, it gives a platform for the filmmakers and the actors. And in addition, it also gives, an opportunity for you to build an audience. So when you do take the film to market, you already have a built-in audience.
Movies are getting cheaper to make in a lot of ways since the equipment is now more affordable than ever. But is this whole process, the stuff you do after making the movie, still a massive hurdle for independent filmmakers? It seems like a whole second job after the movie's done.
Yes, it's absolutely a second job. You spend a lot of time sort of taking the movie from finish to the market. It is, especially when we're doing it at this level, in the indie level, it is, it's a lot of work. I feel like I haven't stopped since we started. We're doing a lot of the work on our own. You know, we're connecting with the audience. We're building our own audience. We are getting the film out there. We are doing our own marketing and PR and social media. So it's a lot of work, but it also teaches filmmakers some really, really key tools, which is how to build an audience, because that is the only way you can really make an impact when the movie gets to the market, because often distributors don't know how to market your movie, especially when it's like a, you know, sort of like a niche movie like ours. Like, we need to tell them, hey, this is where our audience is. This is how we want to take it out to market. And film festivals and doing all of this really kind of helps us figure that path out.
Is there enough support for filmmakers to help get through the process? What would help most?
With getting the distribution, it's definitely still, it changes constantly. I mean, when we started the movie, there was a certain path. And then now that we're kind of getting closer to distribution, that path has already changed. And there's constantly evolving platforms and how you get the movie out there. So what would really be helpful is demystifying the idea of distribution, for a lot of filmmakers, because I've been lucky enough to kind of have some idea about how to do this. I've been able to learn from friends who've done this. I also went to film school, and film school, I think, in many ways prepares you for an industry that doesn't really exist anymore. And I think that, really demystifying distribution, empowering filmmakers to kind of make those decisions and know where the right place is, because distribution is distribution, but also what kind of distribution, who's distributing a movie, where is it going? Those things are really important, and filmmakers need to be educated, because you've spent so much time, developing this film and bringing it to life, and then you just hand it off to someone else to, get it into the world, and they don't really always know exactly how to do that. And I think the more filmmakers involved and knowledgeable, the much better the outcomes are for the movie.
Elizabeth, what about you? What's the value of getting into festivals like Heartland?
This is just fantastic. I was so excited when we heard that we were accepted. For me, this is my very first experience. I have done written a play and done stage work and stuff. And for me, this documentary is so important to do. And like I said before, we took our time to make sure we got the details and everything right. So when we submitted and heard what we did, thank you guys. I am so excited. I will be here every day participating in all of the events. And it's just a big deal for us that someone other than ourselves recognize the value of the story that we're telling.
Craig, Indiana is one of a small group of states that don't offer tax incentives to filmmakers. Are there other benefits to filming here that might not be as obvious?
Yes, and all the filmmakers have got to do is check it out and not take my word for it, because I'm a big advocate of states supporting filmmakers and trying to get them there with tax incentives. However, even though we don't have that, I can tell you that the filmmakers that have come in here since I've been at this city, I've experienced listening to their comments about the city of Indianapolis, the different shooting sites and locations that are available here in town at much more affordable prices. So I think there's other things for them to consider when they come to Indiana beyond just that tax incentive.
Does Heartland do anything to help get the word out about shooting movies here?
Well, we try to support our filmmakers even after the film festival, because we, as our mission states, that we inspire our filmmakers when we bring them into the festival. We want to help. But your filmmakers here that you've been talking to have made some major comments that I want to point out, because you would think they've been doing their films for many, many years, because there was a mention of that not all films are not all perfect matches for film festivals. They may fit in one location and not another. That doesn't mean their film is not good. The comment about distributors. We like to help our filmmakers that are coming in to help them secure distribution, because after film festivals, then what are they going to do? And then the remark about filmmakers are not necessarily marketing geniuses. So we like to think that we're there to support and help them any way we can after the film festival's over.
Pradna, do you plan on watching your movie in an audience at the festival? And have you already watched it with an audience?
I 100% will watch every screening of the film with the audience. That is absolutely the reason we made this movie, so I cannot wait. I have not had the pleasure of doing so yet, but we have our world premiere tonight at 8:45 at the Mill Valley Film Festival. And I am both terrified and beyond excited to do that.
So you haven't seen this movie with an audience yet. Have you screened a film of yours, a previous film of yours before with an audience?
Yes.
What's it like then to see the crowd react to something that's so personal to you that you spend so much time and energy on?
I think it is. It's a very surreal experience. You feel in some ways very exposed. Also, it's like, you let your little baby out there to be judged by people. I think the beautiful thing about a film festival audience is that the people coming there who've bought tickets to make their way out to a film festival are already coming there because they want to be a champion. And I think it's a very different kind of audience. It's a very film literate audience. They enjoy films. They enjoy independent cinema. And it's really wonderful sort of community building. And it's an excellent experience. I've never screened a feature previously. This is my first feature film. I have screened several shorts. Some of them have had challenging topics, and it's always been really a interesting experience to watch it with an audience and see where the laughs are and where, you know, you can hear them, you know, it, you know, the various reactions. It's very rewarding to see when things land and don't land. And it's different with each screening. You know, it completely is a very organic thing, and I cannot wait to experience that today, and especially at Heartland, because there's going to be so many people who are so closely tied to this film there, and I can't wait to watch it with them.
Less than a minute left. Elizabeth.
I just wanted to say that we have a lot in common, Prada. Well, I was married here in Indianapolis and went to school here, born and raised in Indianapolis. And I saw, after doing all the editing, and you would think you're looking at this film and doing and working with it for so long, but it was like the first time I saw it when we had our premiere in Bloomington, Indiana at Buskirk Chumley. And I watched it with the audience, and it was like the first time I had seen it. What a joy. I had the biggest grin on my face. And then because it was so warmly received and appreciated, and then the subject, Reverend Marvin Chandler, was able to be there and have a Q&A afterwards. What a thrill. It was just thrilling, and it was just a highlight in my life, and I'm 66 years old.
That is amazing. That is so wonderful.
We're talking today about the Heartland International Film Festival, which kicks off in Indianapolis this week, and we've really appreciated both of our filmmakers for joining us. Elizabeth Mitchell is a producer for the documentary film Reverend Marvin Chandler, Open to the Moment. Thank you for coming, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
That was Pradna Mohan, director and co-writer of the feature film The Miseducation of Bindu. Thank you. And up next, we'll hear more details about the festival, some of the people and the movies that are coming this year. Of course, we want to hear from you. If you've had a chance to look at the guidebook at heartlandfilm.org, what are you looking forward to? Or share a memory from a past experience at the festival. You can do that on Facebook and Twitter. Find us at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Stay close. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on the Heartland International Film Festival, which starts tomorrow in Indianapolis. We're joined again by Greg Sorovig, artistic director for Heartland Film, and by the president of Heartland Film, Craig Prater. And we're bringing in Julia Ricci, senior film programmer at Heartland. Hi, Julia.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us what you're doing for the festival this year?
Yeah, so this year specifically, one of the program that I mainly was in charge of was the anniversary films. And so I wanted to bring in classic movies to wider audiences to give people the opportunity to see some of these films on the big screen, movies that they may have seen maybe 100 times before that they really love but have never had that experience watching it with an audience, or maybe something they've never seen before. So, because even if a movie is, quote, old per se, it's not really old if you haven't seen it. So
what are some of the biggest movies this year?
So this year we have two huge titles with special guests. We have The Mummy, 20th anniversary with Brendan Fraser.
Born in Indianapolis.
So.
Nice. He's going to be here, right?
He will be here for that screening and Q&A. And then he will also be here for two retrospective screenings of Gods and Monsters and The Quiet American the following day. So we're really excited to have him here for those. And then the second Saturday of the festival, on the 19th, we are doing a 40th anniversary screening of Breaking Away. Classic. The Little 500 film shot entirely in Bloomington, takes place in Bloomington. And then the lead actor in that film, Dennis Christopher, is going to be here for a Q&A as well.
Festivals like this typically use theaters all around the city that they're in to show the movies. Is it difficult to make that happen? Rein everybody in?
It's hard, to reach different areas, but at the same time, we have the different locations that, you know, Traders Point kind of caters to our West Side audience, you know, because not everybody can come over the East Side, or, you know, New Fields, we have screenings there because it's very centrally located. So, I think that it is a challenge that film festivals have, is trying to reach as many people as possible.
David from Facebook sent this comment, looking forward to seeing Whelm film shot on 16mm Kodak film, which is rare these days, entirely on location in Wabash, Indiana. Skylar Lawson is a promising young filmmaker. This period drama looks intriguing. Any comment on that movie?
Yeah, I'll take this one. So Skylar Lawson, he had a short film at our short film fest called Left Hand a couple years ago. And it really goes against the stereotype of what an Indiana film can be. If you even want to just limit, it's not even let's go beyond that. It's just an epic film all by itself. But it was shot mostly up in Wabash, Prohibition drama. And it's pretty amazing. Like you said, shot all on 16mm Kodak film. We're going to have the world premiere, first time you can ever see it, on Sunday night, October 13th. And it's going to be shown on 35mm film, which is going to be pretty wild at Newfields. But, yeah, it's a really amazing film. It doesn't look like anything that I've seen in a long time. It takes me back to a lot of those period pieces that were shot on film, like in the late 70s. Or early 80s. It's a really special film, unlike something I think we've ever shown at Heartland before, and something that anybody's actually seen made here in Indiana. It's a pretty special film.
Julia, what are some of the more special theaters that people might be able to see something? And I know the Historic Artcraft Theater mm-hmm. in Franklin is involved.
Yeah, see, this is the first year that we are bringing the festival down to the Artcraft. We've had a partnership with them for a few years to do a kind of best of the fest in the spring, kind of after the festival. But for years, we wanted to actually host part of the festival there. So this year, we're doing that. We're going to be down there October 15th through the 17th, so three nights with six different films. You can see down there. Really excited. We have a lot of the new ones, but then whilst one of the anniversary films we're screening down there is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade on 35mm film. So
on 35mm?
Yeah, oh, wow. And then we have another film called Going Attractions. It's a documentary about the history of the Movie Palace, and we thought that would be perfect to show at the Artcraft, which is a 95-year-old theater, beautiful marquee, unlike anything I've ever seen. So we're really excited to be down there this year.
And a couple panel discussions are happening this year. Mm-hmm. What are those about?
Yeah, so we have three different panels this year. One of them, Time Magazine, they have done their first documentary feature. And so we're going to be showing that. It's called Paradise Without People. It'll be on Saturday the 12th. And then later that afternoon, the director and producer of that film will be here to talk about the making of that film and how they turned it from a Pulitzer Prize winning cover story to a feature-length documentary film and what that process was like. So really excited about that.
Craig, I understand Heartland is part of a pledge to include more women filmmakers in its lineup. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. This past February, we made a 50-50 2020 pledge. We were attending the Berlin Film Market in February, and international film festivals from around the world were agreeing to sign a pledge 50-50 2020. What did that mean? They wanted to, by the year 2020, have an equal balance of male versus female filmmakers. And there was quite a lot of attention paid to that, and we signed up, and we were one of the major film festivals from around the world that agreed to do that. But when I got back, I thought, I wonder where we rank right now. So I started talking to Julia and Greg, and I thought, I wonder how – what percentage are we doing right now? Well, we were already in the low 40s right off, even when we weren't even trying it. So we feel like we've got a step ahead of all the other international film festivals by finding those quality films.
Greg or Julia, this is probably one for you. What are you looking for when you choose the movies to come? Is it a variety of style and genres, an even mix of different countries maybe? It seems like an overwhelming thing to put together with so many people trying to get their movie in.
Yeah, go ahead first, Julia.
We look for story-driven films, movies that can, inspire the audience, impact the audience, leave you thinking in a different way, can educate in that kind of way, but also films that kind of have a unique vision, something that we may have never seen before, or maybe takes a topic that you would think is kind of tired, but they address it in a new way. We're kind of looking for, combination of that uniqueness, strong story, strong technical elements as well into that one package.
Any follow-up, Greg?
Yeah, I think we have international in our name, so we try to look for some films just beyond the U.S. border as well. there's that mix, but I caught the Roy G. Biv Rainbow Scale. It's not the Greg International Film Festival. It's not movies that I just only like, and that's it. If you don't pass my test, you don't get in. We've had people, we have people coming from 28 years now, so some, the people come up to me every year. I've been here since year one, and that's fantastic. So just like a genre, if you go into a movie theater, you don't buy a random ticket and hope to love the movie that somebody randomly gives to you. I think there's a curation. So whether it's a film that's easier to digest, Like if you see a trailer for a rom-com, you basically see the entire movie in the trailer. You know what you're going into. You know what to expect. We have some things like that that our older audience might like, that it's like classically inspiring. And then we have stuff that's totally new, challenging, wild. Might not be inspiring in the sense of what you see is what you get. But for me, films that take you on an introspective journey, maybe you can find out a truth about yourself or something in the story you haven't thought about. Those kind of films that kind of have their own element of truth to them are the films that really ring true with me.
Here we go. David on Facebook writes, Heartland Film is an absolute treasure in our city. The quality of independent film has steadily grown over the years to the point where it now rivals the quote-unquote famous festivals that get lots of media buzz. I've even taken a week's vacation to do nothing but watch indie films that often sadly do not get wide distribution deals. That's some good praise, Craig.
You know what? And we didn't contact him in advance. I don't know who this gentleman is, but we better get him on board, hadn't we? That was great comments.
Julia, you talked to Greg earlier about the process of getting movies for the festival. What's it like for you, especially with the older ones? How do you get The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, so a lot of it – so we reach out to either – like we have – there are different I guess companies that can do repertory rentals and that kind of thing. A lot of times we are dealing directly with the studios to get permission for some of these. And so it's just, you know, the matter of, you know, reaching out that way and contacting. But in terms of, you know, choosing the, you know, the types of films, it's, you know, what films that, you know, I wanted to do a mix of films that are, you know, beloved, well-known, like Wizard of Oz, you know, something that, you know, maybe everybody's seen, but maybe not, you know, because there are people out there who have not seen Wizard of Oz. So, you know, that aspect, but also, you know, do some deeper cuts as well, films that people might not have even heard of or, you know, would never have had a chance to see on the big screen otherwise. So yeah.
Are you a fan of old movies?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I love them. I grew up, that was something I always grew up watching. I've never not watched old movies, and you know, a lot of people are surprised because I'm so young that I like those kinds of movies, but it's like a great movie is a great movie, no matter when it was made. You don't say, oh, that old Van Gogh painting, it's timeless. Like, you're not gonna, you know, do that. So, you know, that's why, you know, a good movie is a good movie, period. So,
Craig, what about you?
Well, of course, I love the old movies because I can remember a number of these, but I have to comment on something that, Julia, that I think one of my personal goals this year is to attend those anniversary films and see if there's going to be anybody in the audience that can stump her. She is an expert on just the history of these films and everything, so it's going to be fun. But I'm also tracking who's signing up for tickets right now, because I thought when Julia was putting this program together, I thought, well, it'll be the oldsters like me that want to see these films again. But we've got a group of, I think the last count I saw yesterday was close to 80 students, elementary students and high school students, that are coming to these films, everything from The Mummy to Up and The Wizard of Oz. So everybody's wanting to see these old films.
Julia, what do you like about seeing movies in a theater full of people? What do you get that you can't get at home?
Yeah, it's that collective, excuse me. That collective experience when you're, say, like you're watching a comedy. Well, you're watching a comedy at home by yourself. One, you're probably distracted by your phone or whatever's going on if you're making dinner at the same time, that kind of thing. And just, you're just distracted. But at home, it's that collective experience, you know, sitting next to somebody you probably might not have anything in common with, but you have that shared experience of laughter or, you know, sadness or surprise, or there's an energy in the room that you just can't get when you're at home. And sometimes you'll pick up on things that other people, you know, pick up on that you might not have before, like a joke that you might have missed or.
Yeah, you never laugh out loud at home.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't, yeah.
And there are some movies you really have to watch with other people, especially on a first viewing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And is there anything at the festival this year that you're really excited about seeing?
Oh, man, I'm really just excited about all the best international feature film Oscar contenders that we have this year. We have 20 of them this year. And so these are films that are submitted by their respective country to the Academy of Motion Pictures to be considered for the best international feature film Oscar. And so we have 20 different films from all different countries. And these are like the best of the best. And these are going to be basically their Indiana premieres and probably maybe the first and only chance that people in Indiana will get to see them, because they usually don't get a lot of play. you know, maybe a couple weeks at Keystone Art Cinema, but that's pretty much it. And so, like Pain and Glory, for example, I got to see that at Cannes this year, and that was a film that I was like, we have to have this play at Heartland. It was perfect, and I'm really excited for audiences here to see that film in particular.
Craig, where do you want the Heartland International Film Festival to be in a few years? Are you're relatively new there. Do you want to see it change in any way?
I think just keep growing at the rate it's going right now. I think we've made great inroads. They've accomplished a lot in the last 28 years, and I don't think any of us on the team now are going to be satisfied with the status quo. We're just wanting to keep putting a notch in our belt that we're just playing the big game with the big boys and girls of the film industry.
And you're already well on your way to the 50-50 by 2020 thing, too.
We're ahead of the game.
I really appreciate that as well. How is the film festival business doing in general around the country and around the world?
Film festivals, I looked the other day and I saw, well, you know, there's about 2,000 or 3,000 film festivals in the USA alone, but I saw where there was a stat showing that in the course of the last 10 years, 10,000 film festivals have started and 10,000 have closed. So film festivals, just as the normal challenge that all cultural arts organizations are faced, it's always an upward battle because sometimes it's not on a priority list with everybody. But I think a lot of people, we've got very sophisticated audience, film viewing audiences across the country that know that this is one chance to see films that they will never see again. So I think it'll keep growing and getting bigger.
And there are a lot of little film festivals as well. It seems like a lot more than there used to be that have really specific themes. How do these niche festivals fit into the industry?
Very well, as a matter of fact, because we've got the Israeli Jewish Film Festival in Indianapolis. We've got an African American Black Film Festival. We've got the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. We've got the Independent Film. We've got a lot of great ones just here in Indianapolis itself. But they do very well because it's everything from Latino to Italian to Greek. I mean, the list goes on of specific genres that are doing quite well.
And in a way, niche film festivals mirror what's been happening in the media and popular culture in the last 10 years. Things are becoming more fragmented than ever, with internet and streaming services giving room for way more stuff than Hollywood or a small number of TV studios ever could. What role do you think movie theaters and film festivals play in this sort of new media environment?
Well, I think theaters in general that's a challenge for film festivals because just the nature of the stats of major theaters in any major city, they're reducing seats. That affects film festivals greatly. So we've always got that challenge of where is our locations going to be? Do we have enough seats? And as we keep growing here in Indianapolis, that's a challenge here too.
Greg, how much of the Heartland Film Festival is made up of Indiana filmmakers?
Well, we have the Indiana Spotlight program. So I think are there eight films?
Seven or eight
films in that program. But then there are other films. I think in that category specifically, you want a director and or producer and then at least 65% of the film shot in Indiana. So there's still other films part of the main program that are either from Indiana or shot in Indiana. Like we have the world premiere of the film, 1,275 Days. About the Elkhart 4, about kids that were part of this tragic incident and how their legal proceedings kind of played out from there. So that film was filmed in Elkhart but didn't fit the full criteria to compete in that competition. Again, we talk about Pegasus Pictures out of Bloomington, and they had a film called Miss White Light with Judith Light in the film that will be making its Indianapolis, Indiana premiere as well. And that film premiered at South by Southwest, which was pretty amazing as well. So yeah, there is a lot of great stuff getting made here, and I think, but I feel like the media and a lot of other folks too are very reactive as opposed to being proactive. Like when we didn't get the John Green film, like, oh well, let's make an uproar now. So we got to kind of look forward a little bit. But the other thing too is that incentives are not the end all. So, because a lot of states that have that still have to fight and get that reapproved every few years or something too. So it's crazy. So there are people out there making great quality content that aren't waiting for some arbitrary incentive or something to go to. But we are landlocked by states that if you cross a river or a man-made boundary, Uncle Moneybags will be sitting there with two bags of money waiting for you to make your film. And we've had filmmakers say that, like, I just had to cross a river and get paid money to make a film. So,
Greg Sorvik, artistic director for Heartland Film, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Craig Prater, president of Heartland Film, thank you for sticking around and good luck on the festival.
Thank you.
And Julia Ricci, its senior film programmer, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Chris Flood and Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast, find it anywhere you get podcasts. Join us tomorrow when we'll be talking about Indiana's hidden school dropouts and growing concerns about the state's lack of regulations around homeschooling. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. And we'll be back tomorrow at this time for that conversation. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.